to the International House of Horrors.
Hello, valued guests, and welcome back to the International House of Horrors, your sanctuary of spooky for all things horrible, gory, terrible, bloody, and the macabre. I am one of your curators, Joe Merle.
And I'm the other one, I'm Josh. Hi.
And today we are here to talk about Halloween, my personal favorite horror movie franchise. It is the one that started my love of not only horror, but just movies in general. And Josh had the opportunity. So I've seen all these movies many, 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 many times. But Josh, he was a virgin to the Halloween franchise. You'd seen a couple of them, one and two?
No, one and three. I've seen the first one and the third one. Two was banned. And so because that one was banned and I didn't get my hands on it, I decided I wait till I got them all and then just watch them in one go, which I did this week. It was kind of hard in times because they get kind of repetitive.
Yeah, repetitive. Not. Yeah.
Repetitive, yeah.
There is... So the way I view the Halloween franchise, you got the first two, you know, those are pretty much just one story because it picks up immediately after the night that everything happens after Halloween night. You go to the hospital with Jamie. And then you've got three, which is its own standalone thing, which you and I have talked about a lot that I really enjoy. And then after that, you got the Jamie Lloyd trilogy. So you got four, five, and six that all have to do with the Jamie character, even though she gets killed off pretty quick in six. And then seven, they tried to revamp it. So that was in 98. They tried to make this thing new again. And then you've got eight, and then you've got – and did you watch both of the Rob Zombie –
No, that's the second Rob Zombie movie is the only movie I didn't see because I didn't. It's also banned, and I didn't get that one.
Oh, okay, so, you're not missing much.
I'm going to watch it,
I would watch it just for the completionist side of things. So we got the new Halloween that just came out over here. You're still waiting for it. We're not going to talk about that just yet. We're going to dedicate a new episode to that. So 1978. John Carpenter, Deborah Hill, you know, Carpenter had been established, not super established because this was the original was an independent horror movie. And until until the Blair Witch, it was the highest grossing independent horror movie of all time because they made the first one for like $300,000. It was next to nothing. If I remember reading it correctly, it was next to nothing. They ended up making this movie. I watched it a couple nights ago. So how long ago did you see the first one?
Oh, that was forever ago. Like at least 3, 4, 5 years, I think. But that wasn't the last time I've seen it. I've watched it like at least once a year, I think. It's one of those that you can watch multiple times. And
it's always good.
It's great. Like it started the slasher genre, basically.
Yeah, They call it the first American slasher, and you and I have talked about Black Christmas, but this one is, Black Christmas was a Canadian movie, and this was the first U.S. slasher, and rewatching it a couple days, you know, you just get, for so much of that movie, Michael is just stalking. He's not doing anything else. He's hiding behind a bush or standing behind a clothesline, you know, and Laurie's always looking over.
By in the background.
Right, yeah, driving a car. Speed kills, you jerk. And then he slams on the brakes. But Halloween for me, I saw it for the first time. I was really young when I saw it. And I just remember, like, there was something about it. Like, the storytelling, the idea of this ominous presence and this kill. He's just kind of the idea of evil, you know. And Sam Loomis goes on to say it. He's, you know, throughout the series. Played by the great Donald Pleasance. He's the one reoccurring thing that you can always watch in any of these movies because he's such a phenomenal talent. And you have this idea of evil made, tangible, this manifest evil. And but the whole first movie is just Halloween night. This dude escapes from, even though I love it when he's a kid, when he's just standing there with the knife at the beginning of the movie, you know, and so Michael, it's been 15 years. He killed his sister when he was 6. It's been 15 years. He comes back to Haddonfield, Illinois, and is going to, I guess, just wreak havoc. And so I don't want to spend too much on the original Halloween, though, because I feel like anybody listening to this show has seen that original Halloween. I want to hear all about your experience going through the sequels. So let's jump right into to Halloween 2, which was what, 1981, I want to say. So it was 3 years. If you have it in front of you, I don't have anything. Yeah, I don't have anything written down, no notes in front of me, because this is a franchise I've spent my whole life with. But I believe 2 was 81. Yeah.
81, yeah.
Okay. So we pick up immediately where the first movie left off. And so Annie and Linda have both been killed. Lori's been, what did she get? A cut on her arm. And she's psychologically just in a bad place. So they take her to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital. But what is, okay. So just take us through it, man. I want to go on this journey with you. I want to know how you felt watching all of these sequels.
So it starts off, like you said, it starts off right after. And for anyone who doesn't know, by the way, we're going to spoil this franchise. But,
yes, the entire franchise.
Yeah, so the first movie ends with like him being shot 6 times and then he's gone, right? Like they go out and he's not there anymore.
But how good is that line, though? That line at the end when she, you know, was that the boogeyman? As a matter of fact, it was. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
So that's the end, right? And it wasn't planned to get a sequel at first, I think. Like, John Carpenter just said he wanted to make this one movie, but he wanted to have this, like, cool ending. And so, of course, it was perfect to get a sequel for that movie, right?
Right.
So, of course, they did. And I already liked that they started off really right where it ended. Like, it was a direct sequel, even though it was 3 years later. We were going right after it, right? And then so she's in the hospital and Dr. Loomis is still searching for Michael Myers, basically,
right?
Because he was gone. And it's more or less the same, basically, already. Like, it's they just took the setting and put it in the hospital. And of course, in a hospital, there's not like a big crew of doctors and older guys. No, it's like all young people.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of a skeleton crew at the hospital. You know, it's late at night.
It's the night shift.
Yeah. There's only a few people there. And so Jamie's, and one of the things that I watched too the other day, after I watched the new one, I had come home and put on part 2. The one thing that always bothered me about part 2 is that I don't know how Michael knew how to put like a line, like an IV line into that lady's arm where he drained all the blood out.
There's so many things that don't make that much sense when you think about them.
Right.
Also, like, I told you about this off air that the CinemaSins crew, they made a video about the original Halloween. And there's one good question, actually, because Michael was like taken to this psychiatric hospital as a kid, right? He was like 6, 7.
Yeah.
Got put into this hospital. Then 16 years later, he breaks out and he knows how to drive a car.
Yeah, that's and they even address that in the movie, though, where Loomis is talking to the head of the hospital and he's like, because the whoever it was, the I don't know what you would call this hospital head, but he says something about and Loomis says, you know, he just drove away from here. And he's like, how could he even drive? And he's like, well, he was doing very well last night. And they never really explain how he figured out how to...
They mention it, but they don't explain it. Yeah,
they don't really explain it.
Also, like, what was kind of weird in this movie was the kill where he burns the girl to death in the bathtub. Because he also puts his hands completely in the water. They should burn as well or something. But yeah, this is all nitpicking. This isn't that kind of movie.
Yeah, he drowns her in the therapy bath because she was down there. And I like that guy, though, the guy who's, you know, smoking weed and just hanging out. I think he was I think he drove the ambulance, was his job. And he's like, hey, let's go meet up and hang out in the wherever, the therapy bathroom. And you're right, he does just stick his hands all the way in the water. It melts her face right off.
Yeah.
But in this one, he also gets shot in the eyes and is able to continue to walk around.
Yeah, that's true. And the kills are great. Like, they went a step farther than in the original, where it was... well, there were some cool kills, but here they tried to be a bit more creative.
Right.
This was even this was still before Friday the 13th, right? Because no, that's was, like the movie.
I thought Friday the 13th was 80.
Was it 80? Then it would make sense. Because like Friday the 13th was probably the one with Tom Savini where they actually tried to do like the effects were the main thing. And that's that would make sense that they took that from Friday the 13th basically to enhance. Because yeah, they had creative kills. Like you said, the IV in the veins, the bathtub. What else was there? There are some more, I think, like some more creative.
Yeah, there was. I mean, he put the he stabbed the one nurse like in her back with a scalpel, I think, and he lifted her off the ground.
Like yeah, it's like his move, right? Just lifting someone off the ground.
His signature move.
Yeah, and later they changed that to him coming down from the wall on just one arm, letting himself down. Right. That happens like in the last few
movies. We'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Two, what did you think about two just as a sequel in general? I mean, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was more or less the same, but I started right with two. I didn't rewatch one. Okay. So it even though it was kind of the same, I wasn't yet burned out because I hadn't seen all of the same all the time. So yeah, it was enjoyable enough. I wouldn't say it's a special movie. It's a good sequel. It's well done. What I like here, what I think this is the only slasher that really does that, it actually follows, it's actually a real sequel. Like with Friday the 13th and with even the Nightmare on Elm Street. Okay, Nightmare on Elm Street, the second movie, is a complete standout. But in general, with all these slashes, they always go, they just do movie, next movie, and they're like, basically they don't really have... They don't follow
there's
plot
not
threads
a connection.
Yeah, right. And here, that's something I really like about the whole franchises. This is really just one long story. Like, they even have most of the actors at the same... Like, they keep the actors. Like, Donald Pleasence is in there right until he dies. And Jamie Lee Curtis comes back and is always in there. And I think some other people who they bring back. And I...
So let's go ahead. We've talked about three, Season of the Witch, for anyone who might not know, is just a standalone movie. Because after the second one, they were like, hey, we'll just use this name and we'll make all these different stories. Season of the Witch came out. It's a great standalone Halloween movie. But the fans were like, why is Michael Myers not here? Like, bring back Michael Myers. And we should also mention, and maybe you noticed a lot of this stuff, is his mask change through every single movie. The mask, and even in some movies, they use like 5-6 different masks. And it's just like, okay, that's something completely different. But three, Season of the Witch, had to do with the Halloween masks and the Silver Shamrock Company and, I don't know, Stonehenge. It had to do with that as well.
Yeah, I think we can ignore that one, though, because... Even though it is officially Halloween 3, it's not really a movie in the franchise. It was an experiment. I think we don't have to go too deep into that. We'll follow the Michael Myers storyline.
All right, so we jump into part 4. You've got the return of Michael Myers. And I've mentioned this in the past. It's got one of my favorite openings of all time. And it really just feels like Halloween. The title card, and you have like these old barns and you know these Halloween decorations hanging, blowing in the trees. But this introduces us to Danielle Harris, who plays Michael's niece, Jamie Lloyd. And for the next three movies, we'll be following Jamie. And this movie is really Jamie and Rachel. And I love how this one opens up, too, when they go to the sanitarium. They're going to move Michael, you know, and he puts his thumb right through that dude's forehead inside the ambulance. Michael escapes. And why don't you take it away? What did you think about Halloween 4?
Yeah, Halloween 4, it's where they kind of lost a part of the connection because suddenly it's just, okay, we're a bit later now. Jamie Lee Curtis' character, she died. Sucks. But she had a daughter, and now that daughter lives with another family. And of course, Michael wants to kill every last person of his family
in the bloodline.
Still unexplained reasons. And but they still brought Donald Pleasance back now with a cool
scar
on his face.
Yeah,
because he clearly he burned to death in the second movie, but yeah, he just got a scar on his face.
Right.
And same with my. What I liked is that Michael. They said, okay, yeah, he fell down, he burned, but he didn't die, and so they kept him in a hospital and just like, he's strapped down and he's just laying there. He can't move. He doesn't really function anymore completely because he's burned to pieces basically. And so they think, of course, we can just move him. That's gonna not be a problem. But it turns out to be a problem because.
He's still alive and still got that that bloodlust, like you said, hunting down his family. And I really like the scene in 4 where Loomis is talking to him in the garage, and they're at that kind of restaurant garage area, and he's like, Michael, you know, take me, like, leave those poor people alone. By this point, Loomis is starting to reach where he's just like obsessed with Michael and stopping this evil in the world. But that whole sequence where Michael has the, because I think even at that point he still has the bandages on his face
that's the weird thing. He has the mask on in that scene, and I wasn't like, that scene was kind of confusing to me because it kind of felt like maybe he's just hallucinating, Loomis,
right?
And so It kind of didn't fully make sense that they meet there, and then then Michael gets away and Loomis has to follow him again.
Right.
But yeah, that scene in itself was awesome. Like,
yeah, it was
like
really
the standoff. Like, this is Loomis and Michael is basically like Dracula and Van Helsing.
Right.
They're more than just adversaries. They need each other.
Right. They need each other to exist.
Yeah,
and yeah, it was a really good. And he chases him out, and Michael's driving away again. Michael knows how to drive, but he, ends up shooting and blowing up part of the gas station because he shoots the.
And no one hears about that at all. Like,
no.
Loomis has to go to the cops and say he wrecked havoc all across the country. No, nothing happened. And then they find out and look for him.
And Jamie's already having these, you know, visions. She's having nightmares of Michael before. So they lead you to believe there's some kind of connection with Jamie and Michael. And she's somehow like, psychically connected to her uncle because she's already seeing him coming up from under the bed. And then he's in the closet and all this.
Yeah.
And she's with Rachel, who's kind of her not even a stepsister, but like a foster.
No, the adopted stepsister, basically.
Yeah.
They adopted her and yeah. Exactly. They go around and like there's the typical story of like, oh, I gotta babysit because Michael has to kill babysitters, of course.
Right. Yeah.
And so Rachel has to babysit her sister and at first doesn't really like it. And has to cancel on her boyfriend, who then right away goes to another girl.
Right, yeah, he moved on quickly.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I got needs, or whatever the case may be. And she's going to take Jamie trick-or-treating. They go to pick out a costume again. She, sees Michael in the drugstore or wherever they're at. And we do get some really good kills in this one. I like once Michael truly begins to wreak havoc on all these people. And Loomis the entire time is like with the cops trying to hunt down who it is. They accidentally killed the wrong. No, did they kill the wrong kid? In this one, I want to say they killed the wrong kid. And then they move on. You almost have this mob that forms all these locals who remember everything that Michael had done beforehand. And so you got this mob of people with shotguns, and I actually really like that because in a lot of movies, nobody believes them. And they're like, oh, there's no killer, you're crazy. But in this movie, this whole group of just locals, they're like, yeah, get your guns, we're going to go hunt down Michael Myers and kill this guy. But overall, I really enjoy 4. I think 4 is in my top 3 for sure, Halloween movies.
Yeah, 4 is actually, it's a lot of fun, like you said. And yeah, I like that they do the the thing with the cops with the locals that go after him as well and actually help. But then there's this scene on the car where like Michael is just like pulling one off after the other,
right.
Which is kind of weird, but also okay. It's he is superhuman. You could say.
Yeah, by this point, yeah, he's almost indestructible. And we get to the end of this one. I mean, they shoot him and he falls down a well, and that's kind of the end of this movie. And then you know, moving on to the next one, the Revenge of Michael Myers. We almost have this weird like Frankenstein relationship. The Frankenstein monster, you know, when he goes to see the blind man, and we have the same thing in this movie where Michael now got washed away down the water and somehow shows up at this guy's house, and the guy kept his mask and nurses Michael back to health. And as soon as Michael's healthy again, I'm going to kill this guy and I'm going to go right back to what I was doing. There's nothing in between. This is one of my least favorite movies in the franchise. But what do you think about Halloween 5?
So I think I
well, I guess you know what though. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but we should have established at the end of 4, Jamie kills her foster mother. Yeah, that's kind of a big plot point.
We should also bring in that in that store where she sees Michael in the background. She also picks out the costume Michael wore as a kid when he killed his like sister. She didn't know about. She just like saw that and liked it. This clown costume,
right?
And yeah. Exactly, and then in the fourth movie now, in the fifth, now Jamie is kind of
she's almost like, not really catatonic, but almost. She's like been so psychologically damaged, so she stops speaking. She's being overseen by all these different, you know, in and out of these different hospitals, and they're really trying to figure out. She's like psychologically damaged. Yeah. After everything that had happened.
And I liked what they tried to do with this one, where they went a kind of different route. Because so far, even 4 was kind of more or less the same. It was Michael stalking and killing babysitters. And now in the fifth one, they tried to do this this thing with Jamie, like seeing the people Michael is about to kill. And like she... In some points actually saves them. Like this time it's not like Rachel dies, but then is it Tina?
Yeah, Tina's the new Rachel.
Yeah, it's the friend of Rachel. I think she was in the movie before, right? And she's about to die at least a few times, and Jamie managed to rescue her in the last second. And this movie was for reference, this movie was now from 89. This was 1 year after Halloween 4. Like before that, we had longer breaks. This was right after. And so, I like what I tried out here with the whole, she knows she can do even more. She has these psychic powers and she kind of helps. And they kind of just ignore now the whole, like they mention it briefly, but they really don't go that deep into her killing her mother,
right?
her foster mother. She did it. It happened. shit happens. Let's move on. And like also like the sister isn't too wary about it. And yeah, it's so there's problems with this movie for sure. And
and you know, you and I had been texting a little bit back and forth. When you were watching this one, and one of my biggest problems with this one is the they do this weird thing whenever the cops show up, and it's almost like this, you know, like Benny Hill style music where it's like doo, 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 like these weird, really weird sounds that I think they were trying to lend like a comedy element to this, but at the same time it's just, you know, and 89 was when we talked about the year 1989. It was a year that horror was really just, I mean, you had this movie, you had Jason Takes Manhattan, I think The Dream Child, like, you know, Nightmare 5 was the same year. It was just horror was phasing out. It was it was barely able to stand on its own legs. And so you have this kind of weird combination of horror and comedy. But and this one, you know, like you said, there's some weird things going on, like Jamie's psychic abilities, Tina trying to help her out. And then Loomis gets to the point where he's like, I'm just going to use this kid to get to Michael. Like he's, yeah. you know, he's pretty much begging the sheriff, like, let me use this kid. And they go to the school and then they end up going back to the Myers house where he rigs up these insane traps in order to capture Michael. But as a whole, there was some really fun things in this. I like when Michael wears, you know, the other mask. We didn't. Yeah, I don't think we've seen that since the first one when he put on the sheet and the glasses to pretend to be Bob. And this one, he puts on kind of this. It almost looks like a hobo mask, like a homeless person mask.
Yeah, we gotta mention that. This, I think this is the perfect point to bring this in. I mentioned this to you before. I think Michael is just a misunderstood comic. Like in the first movie, like you said, he puts the sheet on and the glasses on top,
right.
to I don't know, to trick the girl into thinking he's her boyfriend. I don't know, but then we get the same thing in this one where he kills Tina's boyfriend, then puts on his mask, sits
right.
in his car. Doesn't talk a word, and Tina thinks like he's mad at her for some reason.
Yeah,
and then like he just sits in the car. They drive together. She says, "I need to get a
cigarettes.
Yeah, from the store." And he just speeds up like to make fun of her basically.
Well, and even to kill her boyfriend. Like, why would Michael take the time to scratch up his car? You know, he lures him out of the car by running a garden tool down the side of the car and lures him out. But yeah, he's, you know, Michael, I need cigarettes or whatever. They're
The boyfriend was also called Michael.
Yeah, and his name was Michael as well. There's a lot of weird things with him in this one. Like you said, the comedy elements that kind of lend themselves well. But I liked him wearing that other mask. And then they show up at this because she even Jamie calls out the store that they go to get the cigarettes. She's like, big cookie, you know, big cookie
exactly.
lady.
Lady with big cookies or something. Yeah.
Lady with big cookies. And but five again is just of the series. It's I'm just not super fond of it. I'll still watch it. I won't ever not watch it. But at the same time, if I have the option to pick between a few of them, that'll never be my go to. And this one, you know, we continue on. And this is the first movie where we establish the idea that somebody is handling Michael. Like there's, you know, the final sequence is really weird. And somebody breaks into the jail where they've got Michael and blows it up, I guess. They go in, or he has like a Tommy gun and walks in, starts shooting everybody. We see this figure in black who goes in, kills everybody in the jail, and then leads us to believe that Michael has now been set free by whoever this is. And that leads us right into the... Did you have anything else about Halloween 5? Anything else you wanted to mention?
That's about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Then we get to Halloween 6, yeah, which is 6 years later, if I see it correctly.
Yeah, 1995. Yeah, it was 95.
So now we're, again, in a whole different decade. And what I really liked about this one is that it's... that it stars Paul Rudd in his first movie role.
Yeah.
And he plays against type because at some point he probably didn't have a type.
Right. But and this he plays grown-up Tommy.
Yeah, he plays the boy she was babysitting in the first movie. He now, of course, is obsessed with Michael Myers as well. Right. And this is the last movie with Donald Pleasance, who has been in all of them. Like, he's been in all six movies, which is... yeah, that's something like we don't get that in any Friday the 13th movie. We get
with Freddy Krueger, but it's the villain.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's always under the makeup. But now this one, The Curse of Michael Myers, is one of my personal favorites in the series, but it's more for nostalgia reasons. And you know, I was 13 years old when this came out, and my dad took me to the video store and actually got me my own video card so I could rent. And he signed off on the thing that's like, hey, he can rent any movies, you know, R-rated, doesn't matter. And so I picked up this movie and I watched it at my mom's house. So my mom, where I grew up, is just surrounded by woods. It's just a house in the middle of 10 acres of woods. No neighbors, no nothing. And that night there was this crazy thunderstorm happening. So it's pouring rain, thundering. There's leaves blowing everywhere. And I sat down and watched this movie, and I just remember it scared the crap out of me. And so I'll always just love this. But the interesting thing with this one is there's really two versions of this movie. So there was the theatrical cut, and then there's a producer's cut, and which is now available. It wasn't available for a long time, but it's now available, and it's essentially two completely different movies. Like, they got to the end of making this movie, and they were like, no, we're going to bring in somebody new, and they recut the whole movie to be something completely different than what it is. And both versions are really cool if you get the opportunity to see both. And this is also my favorite mask in the franchise. I just love the way that this mask looks. I think it's great. But yeah, so now we've got Paul Rudd. Jamie gets killed off kind of right at the beginning. Jamie's had a baby, but we see these like weird, like occult rituals going on. So they've got her all tied up, and she's going to have this baby. She has the baby. This nurse shows up, and she's like, Jamie, run, whatever the case may be, you know, take off, save the baby. And this is one of my favorite kills in the entire franchise, is when he picks that nurse up and shoves her on the wall, and he's just, you know, staring at her. He does that head nod from back to forth.
Yeah.
And he's staring at her, and the music cues up, you know, we've got Michael back. This is a very 90s, mid-90s movie.
Like, yeah, for sure.
From the clothing to the music, the shock jock, Barry Sims, you know, the radio guy. But Paul Rudd is great. I thought he's so good.
He was
in this
really
movie.
Good. At first, I hoped he would be even more than just a creep. At first, he's just a bit creepy, and so I hoped he would stay like that and would just be like another bad guy. But he's actually turning out to be the good guy and kind of the lead,
right?
And I like this one. I gotta say, with this and Five, is I watched them both on the same day in one sitting, basically.
Okay.
So at that point, I was kind of burned out on Halloween for that day. And, you know, after watching Five, which isn't really the greatest movie, I was already a bit down. And then following it up, I got to rewatch them all at some point, because I already kind of mixed them up a bit. But in general, this was good. I liked most of it. The whole cult thing, I gotta rewatch it to fully understand what was going on there.
Yeah, it's such a weird premise in that you have this idea that these people are controlling Michael, and now we have a new character in this one, Danny, who lives in the Myers house, and they lead you to believe kind of that Danny is going to be the next Michael Myers in a way. And, you know, he's always saying, like, Mommy, the man in black is here or whatever, and you see this figure is like, kill for him, Danny. And you've got the they introduce the idea of the curse of Thorn is what it is. And Paul Rudd's character, he starts to figure this out, and he's like, oh, if you look at these pagan symbols and constellations, and it somehow it all lines up, and it has to do with evil, and Michael is this, and so Paul Rudd's living across the street trying to figure all this stuff out. And now Michael has returned, and it seems like he's going for Danny specifically, which I don't know if he was meant to kill him or, you know, Danny was to become the Michael Myers character. But you got some really great kills in this one as well. I love the dad down in the basement gets shoved on the electrical box. And I really like the mom, you know, when she's in the backyard going through all the bed sheets, and, you know, she's lost, trying to find her way out, drops her glasses, and then she looks up, puts her glasses on, there's Michael, and you just see this great like splatter across all these white bed sheets. So it's a lot of fun, but for most people, you know, I'm a huge fan just because of the experience I had seeing it the first time. But I think for a lot of people, if they watch that movie, they're gonna be like, it's just weird, and it's not the best movie.
Also, what confused me, what kind of I didn't know if they explained, like, I watched that one a bit in the background, I think I told you so, because I couldn't fully focus on two of these movies in a row. And but I don't think they really explained why that new family moving into the Myers house is another family called Strode, and why.
Because it was his brother, and they couldn't sell the house. And they have that conversation a little bit, and she's like, that's why we got the house so cheap, because you knew what happened here.
I knew that part. And so, okay, so the father of this family is the brother of one of the parents of Laurie Strode, basically.
Right. Yeah. At least that's how I understand it. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the, but the time difference wouldn't make a ton of sense if that is the case. Like, he would have been much older than, because, I mean, the whole premise throughout all these movies is that Laurie never knew that she was, you know, she doesn't find out until later that she was part of the family. And because she was a baby when Michael killed Judith and then went into a foster care, like an adopted home after that.
Even John Carpenter didn't know that Laurie Strode was the sister of Michael Myers. Right. They made that up for the second movie to have a reason for him to go, especially after her.
Right, to continue to stalk her and try and find her. So, and after this one, I think they reached that point where they're like, okay, we need to do something else. Because the end of this movie, and if you see the producer's cut, you know, at the end of the theatrical cut, Paul Rudd beats Michael Myers to death with a pipe, and then we're left with the mask and a needle on the ground, and we assume Michael has escaped, and you hear Donald Pleasance yell in the background, like, ah, ah. Well, in the producer's
cut. That's the version I've seen, by the way. I didn't even know there were two.
It's two completely different movies. And in the producer's cut, you actually see, because in this movie, you see the little triangle thing on Michael's wrist, the Curse of Thorn. At the end of the producer's cut, Loomis looks at his arm and the little thorn thing appears out of nowhere. So it's almost like Loomis is now going to be Michael's handler. And then we see Michael leave the place. But because of, you know, Donald Pleasance passing away at the end of this one, it was the last time he was in the movie. They ended up changing a bunch of that stuff around.
They released it when he was already dead, right? Because I think it said
in memory of Donald Pleasance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So then we move on to Halloween H2O. So this came out in 98. That's where it gets its name from, is it was Halloween 20 years later. Yeah. And this kind of ignores a lot of the stuff that had happened in 4, 5, and 6.
Even though it kind of works with it as well. Like, I don't think you have to ignore the stuff that happens in 3, 4, and 6. Because they basically, they mention Laurie Strode. Like, in this movie, in H2O, they mention that Laurie Strode died. But she didn't die. She went into witness protection.
Right.
And the only thing that doesn't make sense is that why did she leave her daughter back?
Right.
And I think I've read that they actually planned to include it and even have like one scene where they explain what happened in 4, 5, and 6 and just talk about it for a bit, but didn't put it in the movie because then they decided to ignore the stuff. But I think it kind of still works in one big franchise.
I'm fine with all of it. And like you said, you know, Jamie went into witness protection, or Lori, I should say. And now she's the kind of the dean of a private school.
Yeah.
And this movie is very post-Scream. Like, it feels like a lot of late 90s horror movies. You've got Josh Hartnett, who is still the talk of the town at the time. And so we see Michael eventually is able, and I don't know how he's always able to find, or no, because he killed, which I really like that's the same woman who played the nurse in the first movie is now, and she was, you know, they explain it that she was taking care of Dr. Loomis this entire time. And you hear some audio from the first couple of movies and him talking, and she, Michael breaks into her house and is able to find the files that says where Laurie ended up going. And now she's running this school. And I had mentioned earlier about the movies with multiple masks, and this movie has a lot of different masks in it. There's a ton of different masks.
I think they decided to change it halfway through or something. Like they had one and decided to change it, which is kind of weird. What I like about the opening already is that we got Joseph Gordon-Levitt in one of his first feature roles. Actually, I thought he was in this movie more, but he dies pretty quickly.
Yeah, he dies right at the end. It's an ice skate to the face.
Yeah.
And been known to get a little crazy with the stick as he's walking into her house and stealing her beer. And because they're the neighbor kids after she realized the house has been broken into. He, him and his friend show up, and he's the one who decides to to go in. But he was good. He was young, you know, same time as like Third Rock from the Sun. He's trying to get into feature film stuff. I really like H2O though. I think it is, it's very approachable. It's a straightforward, LL Cool J was a ton of fun. You know, he's the gate guard. He was good in there.
It's fresh.
As well.
It feels more fresh than most of the others, which felt always like retreading the same. In the end, this does as well retread a lot of things, but it felt different. And I liked Laurie Strode fighting Michael in the end, like having her standoff moment and actually winning. Like she has two standoff moments, basically. Like first in the in the house itself, she fights him. She kills him. But of course she doesn't kill him because he never dies.
Right.
And then he let's take it how it is in this movie, not how they say it ends in the next movie.
Right.
But she doesn't believe that he's dead, so she takes the car, the ambulance, and drives him off until she sees him moving and getting out of the body bag again. Then she catapults him out of the car, then runs him into a tree, and then when he's
and he's like reaching there, he's reaching out for her,
trying to like probably get to her good side, I don't know, right. And then she cuts his head off, which is awesome. All the movies before that, I thought, what would happen if we just cut Michael's head off?
And you see this weird look in her eye. Like she, for a second, you know, when he's reaching out, like whatever, sister, at this time, they'd still believe they're brother and sister. And he's reaching out like, sister, don't kill me, whatever. And you see this look for a second. She almost has compassion and then just steps back. You're right. With an axe. Just takes
also,
his head
I
off.
Think it's this movie. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I think this is the movie that makes Michael a bit more human. He has some reactions, actually, because in all the other movies so far, he has never any reactions. Like, he always just walks toward you and kills you. And in this one, I think there's a few times where he's stumbling a bit, where something goes wrong. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because so far we got Michael as, like, the, you know, he's got no reactions. He's just the plank-faced killer. We don't really see his face. Yeah. We don't need... Yeah, the shape, exactly. We don't need to see his face. He's just this shape. And he's always just walking slowly towards you. He never runs, he never stumbles, and he never dies. And so in this one, he gets emotions, at least a bit. And I liked it in the movie. But in the end, now just while talking about it, I'm thinking, like, is this, like, going too far away from the Michael Myers character, or is it okay?
Yeah, I mean, I think again, this is a product of the times, and it was, you know, it was post Scream, and so we had this whole new generation of horror and how people were approaching horror. But I you know, he's still in my eyes in this movie. He's Michael Myers, and you know, they try to humanize him a little bit, but I think that's just you know, for fans of the series. To see that relationship between him and Laurie, that was kind of why they went about it that way. But he's still just Michael, just stalking, killing. And that's I really like the scene in the rest stop where he steals the truck from the lady, you know, and she's in the bathroom and you've got her daughter and mommy spiders, and you know, Michael snatches her purse to get the keys out, and why that lady was driving such an old truck, I'll never completely understand. But no, Seven's a lot of fun. And I think for, you know, I know I have quite a few friends who are a lot younger than I am. And for them, that's one of their favorite in the franchise is Seven, because it was the first one they saw. And, you know, it feels like their youth. And that's
and
the way
I
they go with
it. I gotta agree. I feel the same way. Like, I really enjoy this movie. Also, we haven't even mentioned that Janet Leigh is in this movie.
And, oh yeah.
I love that scene where, like, at first she goes like, not to be all maternal on you.
Right.
And she is, of course, her mother. In real life.
And she's driving the car from Psycho. Like the same car that she was driving in Psycho, which is really
cool. When she walks to her car, they play the music from Psycho.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think before that also and after, a few times they kind of pay homage to Psycho, to the music a bit.
Yeah.
Like they tried something new there. And yeah, I really liked like that whole thing. It wasn't anything big, but I think it was just nice fun. And this is like the humor that we got thanks to Scream, where they're like, they can put these scenes in there and have them work as just a scene in the movie, but also not like be good for the people watching that know a bit more about the stuff.
Yeah.
But they don't distract. Like when you watch the Scary Movies, if they would put a scene like that in there, it would totally be distracting. But here they managed to hit this sweet spot where they put the scene in there, do the fan service without being distracting. It feels like a normal scene. If you don't know what's going on, it still works as a scene in the movie.
Yeah, it was a nice nod. They were self-aware, and it was a very nice nod too. You know, it was like, in a way, it was her mother saying, good job. Like, yeah. You know, because her mom was a Scream Queen. And then Jamie ended up being a Scream Queen in so many of I mean, great horror movies.
Yeah.
So this movie wraps up, and then we get to Resurrection, which, so you just watched this.
Yeah, I just got done with this, and I gotta say, like, when we started recording, you said you hate that movie, and I gotta say, I don't completely hate it. It's not a Michael Myers movie at all.
No.
But I kind of like that they, once again, like this was 2002, 2003, I think.
Yeah, somewhere right in there, 2002,
and
2003.
And they try to do something new again. I like these movies that at least try something complete, like unique. Like here, they're broadcasting out of the Myers house.
Right. There's this new thing called the internet. Let's make a movie with the internet.
Yeah, and still, I think in 2002, 2003... this wouldn't work over the internet this well.
Right. Yeah, so you've got Tyra Banks and Busta Rhymes run Dangertainment. And they're doing this like reality TV show where they bring in all these kids. They're all going to wear cameras, be in the Myers house. And the kids don't know, but they've rigged up the house with all these like fake dead bodies and things like that. And they're, you know, they're trying to turn a coin on this idea. And we do get, which I felt was such a cheap out to kill off Laurie Strode, who's now in a psychiatric hospital, and her and Michael have this fight on the roof, and he pushes her off, and that's the end of Laurie Strode, which felt so cheap.
But she kisses him before she dies, so right. Of course it was an epic moment.
Right, and so now they're going back to the Myers house, and he's going to try and go home, and how they explain it off is that Michael really quick changed bodies with the... and put a different body in the body bag, and I think he severed his. I don't remember. Did he sever his vocal cords?
No, he just like broke his vocal cords. Like he hit him here in the throat, and he couldn't speak. That's the explanation they give.
Yeah, that was... so she cut off somebody else's head, and Michael ended up getting away at the end of 7, and now we're to 8, and a lot of it is shot through you know these body cams, and you see the. Kind of the found footage style that had become so popular in 99 with the Blair Witch Project and then still is prevalent today. Yeah. So he shows back up at the Myers house and he somehow gets away with killing all these kids without anybody really noticing. You know,
it kind of doesn't make any sense. Like there's at least 5 kills on screen before the first person says, hey, he's really killing people.
Right. And so now you've got, which it was kind of fun that they were in the Pulp Fiction costumes, but you have this guy who's kind of not really dating, but kind of courting one of the girls who's in the Myers house. And so now he's helping her by watching the show and sending her text messages and things like that. Which I think she had like a, not even a phone. It was like a, what do they call this?
Like just over the internet, I think. Like it
right.
was...
Yeah,
and I'm not sure anything like this ever existed, where you get the messages one letter by the time at a time.
Right. Yeah.
But of course, that builds great dramatic tension.
Yeah, and you end up with Busta Rhymes fighting Michael Myers like kung fu style, at the
twice. Like he beats him first, then he dies, then he comes back and beats him again. And I didn't pay 100% attention to this movie, but I think Busta Rhymes is the one killing Michael in the end.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't happen.
No, it really shouldn't. And this one to me, yeah, is just it's a blemish on this franchise. It is just, there's nothing about this movie that I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, like I said, I like some of the ideas, but yeah, there's nothing really good about this movie.
No. And go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, and that's that movie, and it's not good.
And then years later, we would have Rob Zombie did his two versions. The first one, I really like the second half of the movie. Once we actually get Michael, I'm not a huge fan of everything leading up to that. And then the second one, I know you haven't seen, so we can talk about that when you get the opportunity to see it. But
we want to do an episode on the whole franchise so far. And so you can give a quick,
with the second one is that Rob Zombie, you know, when he set out to make these movies, he's like, I want to make Michael Myers scary again and make him human. Take away the supernatural elements. The second one, he goes the supernatural route, which I just was not a huge fan of because he wanted to establish Michael as the, and my problem with a lot of Rob Zombie movies, you know, I really like House of a Thousand Corpses, The Devil's Rejects. Is he makes every character seem like the trashiest people on the planet. Like they're horrible.
It's always just trash.
Right. In the first one, I wasn't even mad that Michael killed his family. I completely understood. Like they were horrible, horrible people.
Yeah, every single one of them. Like this was all okay, Michael had a shitty upbringing. No wonder he killed his whole family.
Right.
And I kinda enjoy the movie on its own, like as a Rob Zombie movie, because it is a typical Rob Zombie movie. This is all Rob Zombie movies. He never has any good, nice characters.
No,
they're always trash. And
I really enjoy the second half of the first one. Mm-hmm. Once Michael shows up, I think he's good. He's this huge hulking presence. And it really weird that Danielle Harris was able to play a high school girl when she's like 33 years old, you know, and she still looks so young. And that was cool. And he brought in a lot of the, you know, he's really good about bringing in veteran horror actors and things like that. But I never choose when I'm going to watch a Halloween movie. I never go to the Rob Zombie movies. It's just not there for me.
Okay, so what happens in the second one? Is it... like in the first one, it's basically the story of the first real Halloween movie. It's just him going to Haddonfield and killing people on.
And the second one is just him coming back. I mean, it's he comes back.
So it's
still,
not a direct sequel, like with the hospital, or is it?
It's pretty close. It's just a little bit later. Like Laurie has scars and stuff like that, and she's traumatized by everything that's happened. And it's just Michael's eventual return and coming back. And trying to, he's like lived in a shack for a long time, regained all of his strength, and he ends up coming back to Haddonfield and wreaking havoc once again. But there's these weird supernatural elements with like him and his mom and these white horses. It's just weird, man. Okay, so how would you rate this franchise as a whole? Kind of wrap things up here. What do you think is, now that you've seen all the Halloween movies, and I guess what's your, outside of the original, which one do you feel like you would go back to and watch again as kind of like a second favorite?
I think H2O is the one that I like the most. And I gotta say, I hope this doesn't hurt you badly because you love the franchise. But I think the Halloween franchise is my least favorite of the three big ones.
Yeah.
Just because all the movies feel the same. But not in a way like Friday the 13th, where they feel all the same, but they're also just like really easy watches, and each movie is separate, and you just can throw any of them on and watch them. Here, I feel like you actually have to pay attention because they always have some callback to an earlier movie, and that's hard for this kind of franchise. Maybe it hurt me that I watched them all like in 1 week.
Right, that's a lot of movie and movies and in a short period of time.
It's all the same. What I really like about the genre about this franchise though is that something we don't get in any other franchises. This franchise really spans 3 to 4 decades.
Right.
If we count the first Halloween as a 70s movie, then we would have 4 decades.
Yeah, I think it's a 70s movie for sure.
But it's from the feel, it's already an 80s movie, right? It's more in the...
It's getting like, there, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, we got this, the 80s movies at first. Maybe even we got the 70s movie, then we got the 80s movies. Then we got something from the early 90s with the with Halloween
Part six.
Yeah. Then we got the... Which the late is the 90s. New, the late, yeah, 90s, late 90s where we got H2O. The Scream. And they feel like a movie of their time, always. And then we got the 2002 movie, and while we both said it's shit, what I liked is it threw me back because it looks like a 2000s movie. And right. That was the time where I grew up watching lots of movies. And so I liked that this felt like a 2000s movie while still being a Halloween movie in some way. And yeah, okay, the Rob Zombie movies, they're not really 2010s movie. I think they're just Rob Zombie movies. He's very...
Yeah, it was like 2000... I want to say it was like 2007 or 8.
Oh, right, first, 2007, yeah, right.
When the first one came out.
So now we got... I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it in about 4 hours. We're getting to the newest.
Which is crazy to think that it's 40... It's been 40 years since that original movie came out. And we're getting this... So I have seen it, but we'll wait and talk about it after you've had the opportunity because you guys are getting it. You got it a little bit later than we did, but I am very excited to talk about that. And you know, the character has stood the test of time. It's been 40 years, and he's still relevant. They're still putting out movies with this character who I love so very much. But that's awesome, man. Really glad you had the opportunity to see all these movies. And
well, we got to say, I got to give credit where credit is due here. I got the opportunity to see them because you sent them to me, because there's a few of them are banned here and the other ones don't really have big releases over here. And so my good friend Joe over here, he just sent me like all the movies.
Yes. I found some collections of those and sent those over to you because everybody should see Halloween.
And actually the last three Halloween movies, like that's the box you sent me with three movie pack, right?
Yeah.
And it's actually just got one disc. It's a double-sided disc. On one side, we got the one movie. On the other side, we got the two other movies. So that's kind of crazy that they can put three Halloween movies on one disc.
It is crazy. And we want to know what your favorite is. Shoot us a message, ihohpodcast@gmail.com, and let us know what your favorite of the franchise is. And if you've seen the new one, please send that in as well, because we want to collect those thoughts, what people thought about that. And if you want to get in contact with us, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, IHOH Podcast, find us there and shoot us a message. And as always, jump onto the Apple Podcast, leave a rate and review if you can. That would be super, super appreciated. So yeah, do you got anything else before we wrap this up?
Just one short thing. If there's anyone out there who likes the last Halloween movie we got so far, the Halloween 8,
well,
please let us know.
Yeah, and why?
There's always someone, and I want to hear from you. So yes. Let me know, because that would be interesting.
All right. Yeah, let us know. Josh wants to know why you like Part 8. So for the International House of Horrors, I have been Joe Merle.
And I'm Josh.
And we'll be back next week with all things terrible, bloody, gory, brutal, and the macabre.